Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to Press Coverage. I'm Theo Greminger. And at Press Coverage, I'm trying to find you the edges you need to win in fantasy. I'm trying to bring on the sharpest guests. And today, with a little over one week left until the NFL draft, depending on when you're watching this video, I'm really excited because today I have Sigmund Bloom in the house. How cool is that? Sigmund Bloom, 1 week out from the NFL draft. I had Sigmund as one of my first guests ever on Press Coverage. He helped me get this thing sort of rolling last summer. And I've told Sigmund this before. You've been a sort of an influence on me in fantasy football in terms of my hosting style, your optimistic approach to fantasy football, and sort of your ability to get the most out of guests. A big hat tip to you. On the Couches continued to be one of the best podcasts out there. And you just dropped the Bloom 100, which is always sort of an appointment reading. Unlike every, you know, we do rookie rankings articles. I certainly do them at Player Profiler. But one thing I think is very cool in the Bloom 100 is you mix in some IDP guys, Bloom.
Yeah.
You still got this IDP love.
Always. I mean, I started the Bloom 100, which was the first. And thank you, Theo. It's good to be back with you. Always look forward to a chance to get to talk. I started the Bloom 100, but I think before I was even a writer at Football Guys. I don't know if this is the 19th or 20th time I've did it, because I did it once just for the Football Guys message board. I think it's all foggy at this point. But I was in my favorite original fantasy league was run on Yahoo groups, text documents, and there were 20 teams, and you had a franchise that had a team in every sport, every one of the four major sports, and we competed against each other in every sport. And it was a contract, a salary cap league, full rosters. You know, in baseball you could roster minor league guys and sign them to contracts. And I was trying to find rankings for that kind of rookie draft where IDPs are mixed in, deep lineups and so on, and they just weren't out there. So I think this is a lot harder now, 20 years later. You know, that's one of those pieces of advice to anybody trying to break into the industry is like, what's not out there? What's something that you would want out there that's not out there? And it's totally inexact. And in some ways, I feel lucky that 20 years later, still very few people are doing rookie rankings for mixed IDP and offensive rookie drafts, because it doesn't make me have to sweat too much getting everything exactly right. And it continues to be a moving target. You know, in IDP leagues now, all edge players aren't, and it's the way it should be. Gary Davenport, who works with Football Guys and some other great outlets, really pushed this forward so that all edge players, defensive ends, and 3-4 outside linebackers are together, and then all off-ball linebackers are together, which has greatly depleted the supply of off-ball linebackers in IDP leagues. So we're constantly changing with that moving target. But that's what it's stimulating, right? It's a fun puzzle. And you talk about enthusiasm and positivity, and fantasy football is supposed to be an area that we unburden ourselves. And it's relaxing, it's therapy, it should be enjoying, and it should be an enjoyment to talk about it too.
Yeah, and I think you sort of hit on a number of subjects. It's sort of like years back, best ball was something that was a little niche in fantasy football. Now every single person you know plays best ball. And then years and years ago, Dynasty was it was smaller. And now Dynasty, I mean, I've had Heath Cummings on multiple times. CBS is doing Dynasty constantly. ESPN's right. doing Dynasty. So it's become so big. So now we're trying to find these new little niche places to play, guillotine leagues. I've heard you podcast with Paul Charchian many times. That's sort of becoming a little bit more common vernacular in fantasy. And now Empire Leagues, a way to play Dynasty with even a little bit more potential payouts where, you know, you have to win 2 years in a row to get a big portion of the pot. Those are starting to pick up steam. So we love seeing multiple ways to play this game, the challenging aspect of it, and also sort of the freshness and the newness. So something doesn't kind of get kind of stagnant and always the same.
And all these different things you're talking about, Theo, are fantasy football leagues where the gratification, like you said, for Empire Leagues, it could be off into, who knows how far off in the future. At least it's 4 months into the future from the beginning of the season, more from when you start your draft. And you're competing with actual people, with actual names that you may know in person, or at least be an acquaintance of, at the very least be friendly through social media and through the software you use to run your league, which I think, I'll just take a stand and say, I think it's great to give attention to that and feed that part of our ecosystem, as opposed to the player props and scouting the over-unders and using all of these things, where I think that fantasy football started out as really some people who just like hanging out with each other, and football was the handshake. And, you know, forces that be understand that in our community, there are potential, I could say, marks or customers, and they have seized on that, and they pumped in a lot of money and juiced a lot of stuff. But at the core of it is still people that just like watching football, like talking about football, people who have live minds that are stimulated by how this game continues to change. One of the things I mentioned on a show I did earlier this week, Theo, is one of my favorite games to play right now at this time in the calendar is, where would this player have been drafted 10 years ago? Where would this player have been drafted 20 years ago? And the answers are often very different, which tells me that football is constantly changing. That's why it's so stimulating. And it's great that at the core of our community, including people like you, and you mentioned before the show, we're talking about Alan Seslowski. It's one of my dudes, you know, keeping it real, keeping it about human connection, and keeping it about the love of football.
Yeah, I love that. And it's sort of the fantasy football for so many, whether it's somebody creating content, whether it's somebody doing a podcast, or whether it's somebody who's just a sort of a loyal listener, a participant in Discords, a participant in our chats on YouTube. It's sort of like the concept of like a second place in your life. I know certainly for me, fantasy football is like the neighborhood bar for a lot of people, or the pub, or the coffee shop, you know? So it's a second place. It's something you do every single day. And it's awesome. And this time of year, it's wonderful because it's sort of like the people who don't talk football for many months in your life are coming up and kind of talking to you about the NFL draft.
Yeah.
It's sort of like the regulars come back, and sort of the people that hibernate after March Madness basketball ends, they hibernate for a little bit. Now they're coming back because we're 1 week away from the NFL draft. But, you know, Sig, you put a great deal of work into these rookies in the Sigma Bloom top 100. And you guys are already probably thinking about your redraft in the back burner and all that. But let me ask you this. If you could know the final stats of any single player in 2024, who would it be?
I think the answer is Kirk Cousins. Because I think that for this question, I love questions like this. I love these open-ended questions. I think you get away from the premise of, well, you want to know the stats of the player that is the player. Because you're limiting the zone of influence, really. What you want is a player that, by knowing his stats, you're going to be able to know about multiple players. And I think the core question here at the center of the Atlanta offense is, how much of the Atlanta offense problems were quarterback based? How much of it was Arthur Smith based? And how much of it will be fixed? Now, there's the variable here of Kirk Cousins coming back from this injury, but I think he'll be okay. So if we know that Kirk Cousins is going to throw 40 touchdowns this year, well, then we know that we need to be in on Bijan Robinson, Drake London, and Kyle Pitts, right? Alternatively, if the offense only improves incrementally, even though the quarterback quality went up, now you can start making some observations about Pittsburgh. Now you can start to say, well, maybe we shouldn't bank a lot of gains for the Pittsburgh offense because they actually have a competent offensive coordinator. And we're asking the question about what Arthur Smith did back in Tennessee. How valid is that? Did he make chicken salad out of not very much? Or was it just happened that because Derrick Henry was there, his job became a lot easier, and he's kind of a single-minded offensive coordinator who happened to have the personnel to fit what he wanted to do. There's a lot of questions that intersect with Kirk Cousins and the Atlanta offense, and they would give us answers to questions about other players.
Yeah, no, I love that one. And certainly it's like Kirk Cousins is never the one where you're like, this guy's going to be a top quarterback three this right. year, but it's what he's been able to do for receivers in the past, whether it's Adam Thielen, Justin Jefferson, it's Stephon Diggs. He's been sort of a driver of other players' mm-hmm. fantasy success. So I love that one. And certainly Zach Robinson would be somebody
yes.
that gives you some enthusiasm. But besides Robinson, or Robinson could be your guy,
yeah.
which offensive coordinator hire or second-year offensive right. coordinator has you the most excited? Sort of which offense do you think right. could be trending up with the stylistic change and the scheme?
Yeah, I think two answers I have here. For second year, and I love that you bring up second year. I talked about this a lot last year. I got really obsessed with this idea last year that because we're so tired of how so many of these offenses are in the ditch on the side of the road, like the Steelers, and wow, you have a competent offensive coordinator. Well, it takes a while. It takes a while to install these schemes. You may not really start to see it until halfway through the year, or maybe year two, when everybody has had a full season. Ben Johnson in Detroit, I think, is a good example, where he was hired as an interim offensive coordinator at the end of the year. He had four or five games. That's when Amon-Ra St. Brown went off, right? And so he had a head start. He was kind of 1.5 year coordinator. So for the second year coordinator, I'm just going to say Shane Steichen, because we didn't really get to see what he could do with Anthony Richardson last year. And I just think that we could see how much losing Shane Steichen hurt the Eagles offense, right? So that's a good way to do the math and say, well, he's probably going to help the Indy offense. And maybe we're underestimating Jonathan Taylor. Maybe we're underestimating Michael Pittman, Anthony Richardson, and Josh Downs, and so on. For a first-year offensive coordinator, it's got to be Shane Waldron. And Luke Getsy's down in Vegas, so I don't want to say, hey, Luke Getsy was what was wrong with Chicago's offense, but they never really, I think, gave Justin Fields a legitimate chance when you compare it to what Caleb Williams is going to get. Caleb Williams is going to be a really fascinating case because, unlike typical number one overall pick quarterbacks, he's not being brought in to rescue a franchise that is at the bottom of their arc. They've actually built around him. Matt Williamson, who I go way back with, love him, fellow Yinzer, said they're building a nest for him. Well, usually number one overall pick quarterbacks, like Bryce Young, didn't have a nest. You know, he didn't even have a tree to put a nest in, right? So I think that, and how's that going to affect Bryce Young's career? Well, Caleb Williams is going to get that chance. And Shane Waldron and what he did for Geno Smith and how Geno Smith was seen around the league, if Caleb Williams get any sort of bump similar to that, this could be really exciting right away.
No, I love the response. And let's take it back to Shane Steichen. Mm-hmm. I thought that one was super interesting. And you also talk about the kind of growth you see from offensive coordinators in the second year. That Philadelphia offense in year two, in the Sirianni-Steichen era, took that massive leap forward. Jalen Hurts didn't hurt either.
No.
But those guys did a great job. But let's pivot back, because one player that, when I asked you, give me somebody a little bit underrated, you can take this from redraft as maybe a guy right. targeting your best ball drafts. If you're dynasty manager, go trade for this player. And I'm glad you said this, but it was Josh Downs, who's been sort of the forgotten man in this Indianapolis offense. He set the record for Colts rookie receptions. He was a huge hit by all accounts, had a number of spike weeks for us as well, but he's sort of been brushed aside
yeah.
as you hear about, you know, Brock Bowers and wide receiver targets for the Colts this NFL draft.
I think what we have to like about Josh Downs is he's the vertical target, and you know that Shane Steichen is going to emphasize throwing downfield. This isn't going to be a timing-based dink and dunk pass offense. This isn't going to be a West Coast pass offense, okay? This is going to be a power Jonathan Taylor downhill running game. Michael Pittman is there to win outside and convert third downs, and he's going to be that possession receiver. And maybe he's going to get a lot of design targets on RPOs and things like that. But Josh Downs is the guy that can break the game open. Josh Downs is the guy that can get behind defenses that are stacking the box and having to play 11-on-11 football because of Anthony Richardson. So he's a super exciting guy. And he's a Matt Harmon reception perception favorite. So that never hurts.
Yeah, no, I love it. Downs is definitely one that's I think just kind of under the radar right now. And it's funny, it's like the market's sort of valuing him like they were in rookie drafts last year, a guy that was just kind of brushed aside. But guys that are third round picks, when they flash at this level, whether it's a McLaurin, whether it's a Deontay Johnson, they certainly seem to kind of stay around. So yeah. I would not bet against Downs. Great target everywhere. But you brought up, you know, you're always associated with Pittsburgh because your team. You're using terms like yinzers, like, you know, you're all Pittsburgh. You're all Pittsburgh. So we saw sort of this story play out in fantasy for years. We saw Austin Eckler eventually overtake Melvin Gordon and have incredible fantasy success. We saw Tony Pollard eventually overtake Ezekiel Elliott and have really, really good fantasy success, certainly not as long as Austin Eckler. But it seems like there's a slow drip here, and this could be Jalen Warren season in Pittsburgh this year. Like, the hope for fantasy managers, dynamic talent, last year gets, you know, over 1,000 combined yards, took a step forward. Year one, carved out a role, certainly limited Najee's target ceiling. And now we have an offensive coordinator change. Arthur Smith's been a guy, you know, I'm one that's criticized him a lot for fantasy, what he did with Drake London and Kyle Pitts, but certainly has maximized running back production, whether it's Cordarrelle Patterson, Derrick Henry, Bijan Robinson last year, they all do well. Jalen Warren, Sig, how optimistic should we be about him?
Way more optimistic than the public is right now. You know, you can look over at Underdog, and Jalen Warren is still going after Najee Harris. I think it's about 86 and 91. And they're both reasonably priced. And look, Najee Harris, if the Steelers' offense is better, he might score 12 or 15 touchdowns. They can both be hits. They can easily both be hits. So I'm not saying don't take Najee Harris. You're stupid if you do take Jalen Warren. Take them both. I mean, if you want to put a chip on the Steelers' offense, they could easily both crush their ADP. They could easily both be third. I think in a best-case scenario, you could see, you know, Harris as a fourth-round value, Warren as a third-round value. Because we're wondering, how much will Arthur Smith improve this offense? Matt Canada was an obstacle. Maybe I'm just a neurotic Steelers fan. He was an obstacle to the offense improving. Okay. Kenny Pickett, the quarterback play. I mean, just Mason freaking Rudolph. Look what Mason Rudolph spikes the passing game, how low functioning was that passing game? So you have so many obstacles to overcome for this Steelers offense. So even if Arthur Smith is just neutral, if Arthur Smith doesn't add anything schematically and by drawing up plays, but just doesn't get in the way of the offense, we should see a boost. I also would love to see the Steelers take a center or an offensive tackle in the first round this year. That's another thing I think that will create some buzz here. But you're absolutely right to point out the trajectories. Jalen Warren, why Jalen Warren now? Because there's a new offensive coordinator. Because when there's new staff, then some of the old biases go away. Okay, Najee Harris, I don't think we're going to see the Steelers pick up his fifth-year option at about $7 million. That should be another sign of where he's at and their plans. And I think anybody who watched the games last year could see who was better. I think that, Theo, I think by week two or week three, we might be saying like Jalen Warren should have been a third or fourth-round pick.
Yeah, I love that one. And I actually took him in a startup like 2 days ago. So well done. I love that this – and then I text you and I'm like – hey, Sig, give me a dynasty buy. And you say, you know, so that was great timing on your part. I want to stay with Pittsburgh because one player, Deontay Johnson's gone. Last year, we saw George Pickens take a big step forward. I think a lot of the Pickens faders, the people who never really bet on him to take a step forward, he can't separate mob, has kind of chilled out a little bit. Yeah. He went over 70 receptions, went over 1,000 yards. And had those big, huge, massive spike weeks to end the year. Yeah. You love seeing these guys play well at the end of the season. Right now, there's sort of a hole at wide receiver two. We'd expect them to maybe draft somebody. But Pickens has seen his dynasty value, his best ball value, just shoot up this offseason. Mm-hmm. Is this warranted? What are your expectations for Pickens in year three?
It's very warranted, but yet still, as I look over at the Underdog ADP, his ADP is like 50.
Yeah.
Wide receiver 31. Whoa. I think I notice what I'm going to do here, Theo. I think it's reasonable. I don't think it's optimistic. I think it's reasonable to project George Pickens the same as DJ Moore's 2023. Look at what I did there.
I love that one.
Why? But did the quarterback, who was DJ Moore's quarterback? Who was DJ Moore's quarterback last year?
Right? Justin Fields.
Justin Fields. And Russell Wilson also is no stranger to throwing moon balls and saying, I'm going to let my guy go get it. Tyler Lockett, you know, and George Pickens isn't a speed threat, but George Pickens wins at the catch point. So absolutely, George Pickens is underrated and at top 10, top 12, a wide receiver one for fantasy football. Again, not only is it in his range of outcomes. Now, DJ Moore's ADP is taking a little bit of hit because of Keenan Allen, but even with Keenan Allen, his ADP is 23. So I think, again, Pickens belongs around the third round with the possibility that right away we're looking at him as a second rounder. And just like DJ Moore last year, any given week, he could win your week for you. The other thing, since you're bringing up Pickens, is I think Pickens was at this point in the draft process, if we were talking about Pickens 2 years ago, we'd say skills are undeniable. Again, not necessarily separation or route running like he's an ice skater, but you know, matrix at the catch point and just a natural, just an absolute natural, including at the outside, operating near the boundary against physical corners, all the stuff he's going to have to see in the NFL. But he's a different kind of guy, right? There's the but. This is why Pickens was a second-round pick. First-round talent, second-round pick, because the picture of him in front of his TV with, you know, prospects are crying or they're with their family hugging them. He's just looking at the TV with this look on his face like, wonder what's going to be next. So with that in mind, I think there are two prospects that would become much more intriguing in this year's class if they are a Pittsburgh Steeler at the end of the draft. A.D. Mitchell being one. We could get into some of the different stuff about A.D. Mitchell and Jermaine Burton being the other. And I think that with Burton, you know, it's that he got on the wrong side of the coaches at Georgia and Alabama. With Mitchell, it's like inconsistency. But everyone agrees that, you know, Burton's tape is first round tape. He's not going to be a first round pick because of these questions. And Mitchell could be a first round pick because his potential is that high, even though he was inconsistent. And there's been some stuff, Bob McGinn and his unnamed scout sources, some of that stuff is laughable. But when three of them talk about his type 1 diabetes, which again, is it fair that we're talking about this right now? This stuff probably should remain private, but it's not now. But that actually gives you a path to getting the best out of Mitchell. So, you know, if Burton or Mitchell landed with the Jets, you know, the Panthers, right? I'm even starting to wonder about Washington, Theo, already. These yeah. organizations where the owners are stepping in way too much on the football side. I don't want to say they're bad organizations, but they're not organizations where guys flourish. They're not organizations where guys hit their best case scenario. We see now with Pickens, now there's Martavis Bryant, you know, there's Antonio Brown, the Deontay Johnson relationship kind of soured, but they got the best football out of Deontay Johnson. They got the best football out of Martavis Bryant. Obviously, Antonio Brown's going to be a Hall of Famer. So the Steelers will get the best out of a player, even if eventually it goes south. So if it's Burton or Mitchell for the Steelers, pay attention.
You weren't a big fan of Washington sort of having the Bachelor episode with all the candidates for quarterback.
You get the clipboard, yeah.
Yeah, that was really, really weird. I mean, you could do that with two guys, but it was weird to bring in that many. But super interesting. And the diabetes thing, you know, people are so quick to forget Mark Andrews. We had the same story with Mark Andrews, and it was sort of he became this huge success story, how he's able to manage his diabetes, next level athlete and all that sort of thing. So they've done this a million times. And one thing I'll add in, you bring up Adonai Mitchell, Jermaine Burton would be cool to see Pittsburgh draft him in like the third round.
Right.
But Adonai Mitchell, Pittsburgh would have to use a first round pick to get him. I think they'd have to use that valuable pick. What are your thoughts on that? You think that they would go in that direction? It's been a while since Pittsburgh took a first round wide receiver. All their success stories were second round picks. And certainly Antonio Brown, they drafted on day three. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it would definitely not fit the MO of this organization for the last 10 or 15 years. I mean, you're going back to like Plaxico and even with the littered with guys like whatever, Charles Johnson and Troy Edwards. But if they feel like they can help him solve this in the McGinn piece, a go long, Tyler Dunn does a great job over there covering he covers football in a way only he can. A truth teller said that, you know, Mitchell's going to need someone that for a couple of years, like, follows him around and helps him manage his type 1 diabetes. But the story the scouts tell is that when he's managing his diabetes, great player, practice player, what you want as far as a citizen of your team. When he's not managing his diabetes, not so much. And I think anybody who knows someone type 1 diabetes or someone has blood sugar issues, hypoglycemia, things like that, can attest to this, that it's sometimes not a question of are you a bad person, but, you know, how are these physical things that are feeding into your emotions, your psychological state, how are they being managed? If the Steelers feel like, hey, we can manage that. You know, this is like Jalen Smith when the Cowboys took Jalen Smith in the second round because the team doctor was the surgeon who did his surgery, right? And they're like, okay, well, we feel like that we know. And the Steelers and their experience getting the best football out of these somewhat volatile personalities, I would say if they're going to do it, then they have a plan and they have a way to outflank. You put Mitchell and Pickens out there, you have two guys that scare the defense. Now, how do you defend that, knowing that you're also going to have a running game with Harris, and you're going to have a running game with Bourne, and you're going to have, whether it's, if it's Wilson, at least he can extend plays. If it's Fields, now you're playing 11-on-11 football. That's a lot of things slanted in the offensive direction.
I love it. It's certainly exciting. We're going to dive into some of Sigmund's top rookies, and we're going to kind of question him a little bit on which players we should be targeting in our upcoming rookie drafts and which rookies are going to make the most impact in 2024 in just a moment.
Hey, why do we partner with the FFPC? Because they have the widest variety of fantasy football formats, and it's the easiest place to find all types of fantasy football contests in the world. What if you want to play for high stakes? Well, they have a $6 million prize pool with their Fantasy Players Championship. They also have way too early best ball leagues that start in February and dynasty leagues. They have the closest thing to a liquid market for orphans that there is in all of Dynasty. And the FFPC has sponsored us for half a decade because we are actually delivering information that can help fantasy gamers. And they're generating so much interest and bringing in so many new users, casual users even. The FFPC creates a unique experience where you can both compete against the best and make money. Use promo code UNDERWORLD to get $25 off your first team. $25 off your first team at the FFPC with promo code UNDERWORLD. Go get it!
Welcome back to Press Coverage. Theo Greminger with Sigmund Bloom. Sigmund, we got to dive into this rookie class.
Yeah.
We're 1 week out from the NFL draft. And one thing that I think is a little bit interesting is having a conversation about Caleb Williams and sort of his fantasy potential. Mm-hmm. You share the same optimism that I do. You have him highly ranked in single QB rankings, as do I. I think that people are underrating a little bit of just how special he could be as a fantasy producer.
Yeah, I think that you have around him an offensive line that is finally gelled. You have a decent running game. You have a competent offensive coordinator in Shane Waldron. You have Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, Cole Kmet. I think they brought in Gerald Everett too. So you have all the pieces around him. And then you have in Caleb Williams, you know, guy that is definitely used to negotiating better outcomes against pressure. And look, every rookie quarterback's going to make mistakes. Look up how many interceptions Peyton Manning threw in his rookie year, okay, when his completion percentage was. Every rookie quarterback's going to make mistakes. But unless your league is, you know, minus six per fumble, yes, Caleb Williams is going to have to work on that. He's going to put up numbers. Remember, he gets to play Minnesota twice. He gets to play Detroit twice. Whoa. I mean, come on. Just those four games, if you do weekly projections, you're probably going to project him in your top five. Just for those four games. So Caleb Williams waiting at quarterback in a redraft league, getting him at the 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th quarterback. That sounds good. You can apply all this to Jaden Daniels too. But I think Caleb Williams has a better chance of not getting hurt and hitting that ceiling in year one. Because again, unlike a typical number one quarterback, he has everything built around him already.
Yeah, no, I love it. And I think Caleb is hands down QB1 for almost everyone out there. But I think there is a little bit of a discussion, and there's certainly discussion in Washington right now about who they are going to take at number two. I think it's going to be Jaden Daniels. But for you, Sigmund, mm-hmm. when you look at QB2 in this class, I thought you made a very interesting point on a recent podcast with Cecil Lammy, where you said Drake May sort of checks off a lot of the boxes that we've seen in past number one overall picks. And that sort of resonated with me.
Yeah.
But you still have him as QB3 behind Jaden Daniels.
Yeah.
Talk about Jaden Daniels and his immense fantasy potential, and then maybe touch on Drake May as well, who's certainly like, I was in a rookie Superflex mock draft last night, and he went at the 107. He's sort of becoming this incredible value right now in a lot of these leagues.
Yeah, I think that's fair in a Superflex, that if he falls that far. I mean, it's just sometimes it depends on needs. Look, what Jaden Daniels has going for him that Drake May doesn't is we talked about A.D. Mitchell. Like A.D. Mitchell, his people do these prospect models, right? And his production, his inconsistency, wide receivers like A.D. Mitchell with that profile, no matter what their measurables are, don't go in the first round. Yet the betting markets, I think, put it at 17.5 over under, whatever. He may not go in the second round. He's going to go very early in the second round if he doesn't go in the first round. Why would a player like A.D. Mitchell go in the first round, even though he hasn't proven he can do it? It's because of what he forces defenses to do. And that can create production for other players. You know, Xavier Worthy's teammate. Why is Xavier Worthy going to be a first-round pick, even though the fastest guy in the wide receiver of the draft never pans out unless it's DeSean Jackson? Because it opens up things for everybody else. Jaden Daniels does that for an offense. You heard consistently defensive coaches saying, he's the guy I don't want to have to prepare for. He's the guy that when I think about leading up to a game against him, that's going to be hard to prepare for. Drake May isn't quite as much of a game breaker as a runner. Both of them have questions about pressure. Honestly, both of them, you see their process, their mental process under pressure, that's going to be tested. You know, that's the big leap. And I think that's part of why Caleb Williams belongs on a tier above them, is because yes, Caleb Williams makes some bad decisions, but you can tell his thought process and his physical process isn't sped up. He's not in a heightened emotional state. He's able to handle these things when the bullets are flying around him. Neither May or Daniels have that down consistently, and it may be both of their undoing. And it could be just as simple as this, Theo, right? If Minnesota trades up to number three and for Drake May, he's going to be a success because they have already built something there. But if New England stays put at number three and takes him, he may be a failure, because more is going to fall on his shoulders in the same way it did, say, Josh Allen's career early on in Buffalo. So I think that it's still, and then there's J.J. McCarthy, and it won't be shocking if any of those four guys are the best in this class when it shakes out. And in the case of I don't think Williams is going to bust, but I think May, Daniels, McCarthy, you know, it's possible they may not make it to the end of the rookie contract as a starter, and that's just the nature of the NFL now.
So let's stay on that one. New England, that's interesting, because that's sort of been my bull case, is the New England landing spot could end up being a more fantasy-friendly landing spot than some people think, because if Drake May has ability as a runner, but it sort of takes two to tango, where you've got to have an offensive coordinator who's using him in that capacity to sort of elevate his fantasy floor, the chances of like a one-man gang type attack are there in New England with Van Pelt as the offensive coordinator, maybe more so than if he landed in Washington and it was a little more controlled environment, right? Or certainly Minnesota, where he's not going to be scrambling in Minnesota. He's going to be passing to the elite weapons behind center a lot in a shotgun. But do you think that would actually be counterintuitive to have to put so much on his shoulders fantasy-wise for his sort of NFL success?
Right. Well, can he handle it?
Yeah.
Can he handle it at this early juncture of his career? That's the question. You know, and just really quick on Drake May or the Minnesota or J.J. McCarthy, like just look at the numbers that Joshua Dobbs and Nick Mullins are putting up in that offense. It's already built. It's already there. What's Alex Van Pelt building? I don't even know what coaching tree will we put him in, like the Kevin Stefanski coaching tree. I think that what makes sense is that the Patriots offense doesn't really have any advantages. And maybe Drake May in year 3, 4, 5 would be an advantage, but not Drake May the rookie. So, you know, I think another example here is like Quentin Johnston last year, right? Quentin Johnston was a bust last year because Matt Harmon did a great job breaking this down, because he was asked to do things that you could see on his college tape that he didn't know how to, he couldn't do yet. He wasn't there yet. And because of the injury to Mike Williams, they had to ask him to do that. Well, they didn't have to. And then Joshua Palmer. So I think if you're asking Drake May to be like Andrew Luck, and just the way I described it with Luck early in his career was they just dropped him in behind any enemy lines and said, shoot your way out. Drake May's not ready for that. You're going to break him. You're going to break him mentally if you do that. And that's why I think that while for fantasy, maybe in the short term, he could just compile stats because, well, he's going to be all they have in an offense that doesn't really have much ammunition. In the long term, I think it's going to imprint on him, and it's going to be a playing style that's just not going to last.
Yeah, I think it's sort of the disconnect between the game we play and the actual NFL game, where a guy like Justin Fields can be a guy that's a locked-in starter for us in fantasy, a guy we're excited about starting, but then goes 10 and 28 because they didn't set things up correctly for him, and now he's a guy that we don't think is going to start in week one. I think that that's a great, great point. Let's pivot off of quarterback, though. I think that those guys are all interesting. J.J. McCarthy, it seems like, you know, your brief, you know, two sentences on J.J. McCarthy, it's sort of, if he lands well, he's got a shot to do well, correct?
Yeah, well, he has, I mean, there's a lot there. I don't want to hold against him that Michigan didn't make him the centerpiece of the offense. There's more than enough there to work with, and because he's probably not going to be a top three pick, he may get eased in, which is the best scenario for a quarterback like him.
Yeah, no, I think that's very fair, but one position that it's sort of a clear cut, one of the best we've seen in quite some time is Brock Bowers at the tight end position. This is the most hype we've seen with a tight end prospect since Kyle Pitts. But from a kind of a bird's eye view, before we dive into Bowers, the prospect, is we are now seeing like Sam Laporta, Dalton Kincaid, Trey McBride, and then you could put Evan Engram, who had a ridiculous amount of targets last year, all sort of in that 6'4", sub 250 range, and really 6'3", you know, 240 for a lot of these guys, I think, if we were truly testing them. Brock Bowers is now in that mix. He's already hyper-valuable in best ball and in dynasty. Do you think this is sort of a things to come, a changing of the position, where we go from the Gronkowskis and the Jimmy Grahams, these massive basketball playing dominant fantasy players, to these new fantasy assets that are smaller, sort of like overgrown wide receivers?
It makes sense, right? Again, what I said earlier about this game continues to change. Okay. So what has happened? Defenses have gotten lighter to take away the downfield pass, right? Above all, we're not going to let teams beat us with downfield passing. So now you have, it's much easier. You know, Theo, there was a time that if a linebacker was like 220, Telvin Smith, whoever, 220, 225, 230, oh, he can't be, what is he, a safety or a linebacker? But now linebackers are lighter. You don't have thumpers now at the linebacker position. Even safeties, I think, are asked to do more roles. They're asked to be more versatile, but that's a physical mismatch. Linebacker, that's a physical mismatch. A slot corner, that's a physical mismatch for Brock Bowers. So I think that it makes sense that those players that aren't necessarily an extra offensive tackle, not lumbering, but players that can, you know, occupy the middle of the field, as opposed to someone like Brock Bowers, who has speed, who has route running chops, who has run after catch chops. And you can just look at what they did at Georgia, where you have a lot of future NFL players around him, future wide receiver, NFL wide receivers around him. And you also have a future NFL offensive coordinator in Todd Monken. And they said, no, how are we going to win at the highest level of college football? We're going to use this guy a lot. And I know in the show sheet, you said that what's a potential spot, good spot for him, or ideal spot for Brock Bowers. Okay. And this is what I think can actually happen. I think there's a 10%, 20% chance. I don't think the Jets are going to take Bowers. That's where we're going to sit up when the Jets are on the clock. That's the first moment we're going to sit up and say, okay, is this when we hear Brock Bowers' name? I really think if the Jets don't take Bowers, that you're going to see him fall to Cincinnati. Now, will Cincinnati take him? I don't know. But it would be a very Cincinnati pick to take him. You put him in that offense, T. Higgins likely on his way out, maybe this year, maybe next year. And you have Joe Burrow. I think that this is exciting. Super, super exciting. I think at that point, if someone said, well, I'm going to take Brock Bowers over Rome Odunze, or I'm going to take Brock Bowers over Malik Nabers of the Giant, I'd say that's not crazy.
I love that one. And it's sort of like when we look at tight end production at the truly elite level, we need our tight ends to be top two targets on their actual team or have immense touchdown ceilings. And I think he would check off both boxes attached to Joe Burrow. I actually love that one. Like, and also from a cynical perspective, you're going to have Cincinnati saying, you know, I don't want to pay T. Higgins and I'm already having to pay Ja'Marr Chase and pay Joe Burrow, but tight ends, I don't have to pay him as much. Mm-hmm. So I could use him as a de facto outside wide receiver with his skill set without paying him that wide receiver bag. So I love that one. And one thing I thought was very interesting, you wrote this in the top 100, in your Bloom top 100. And I've also brought up this point that I think that the dynasty marketplace was a little scorned by Kyle Pitts's struggles, that they're continually bringing him up as a reason not to use a high rookie pick on Brock Bowers. He's being punished for another player's unfortunate situations and productions. It's a very odd dynamic. Maybe touch on that.
Yeah, well, and TJ Hawkinson and the class that had
Noah Fant.
Noah Fant, the class that had David Njoku and Evan Engram. There's somebody else I'm forgetting there. There were three in that class that were first round picks. So it hasn't gone well. There's a sense you have to wait around for a long time. And then what do you even get at the end of when you wait around? Is it really that big of an advantage in your fantasy leagues? Now, it may well be that when we see Kyle Pitts with Kirk Cousins, everything's fine. And we say, well, it was really just the quarterback play. It was uncatchable balls. It was the Arthur Smith getting too cute because he was trying to mask the quarterback deficiencies by outwitting everybody instead of just being really straightforward. So yeah, I think absolutely if Brock Bowers, let me put it this way. If I'm in a one quarterback league and Brock Bowers falls past five or six, I'm blowing up the phones. You know, I'm trying to do what I can to get up and get him because there's a scenario here with no alpha at the tight end position right now. There's a scenario here where very quickly he becomes the most valuable tight end. And he could be a Cooper Kupp kind of player where your pass offense is really focused on him as a player that makes things go.
I compared him and I got some, you know, anytime you could do a player comparison, you always get a little pushback, but I said, it's sort of like an overgrown Jordy Nelson with a little bit of Shannon Sharp mixed in him. He's a different kind of player. The backflip was very cool. So much like, you know, cynical people saying anybody can do a backflip. I don't know. Brock Bowers looked pretty athletic. I think it's pretty cool to see our tight ends
athletic.
Doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big time. Big time. Let's pivot over to the running back position. Not on the show sheet, but reacting to sort of today's news, we saw the Los Angeles Chargers sign another Raven. And this one's a little bit exciting because it's J.K. Dobbins, a player that we had so much optimism for in the past. Now, we don't know the contract. It's a one-year deal, which could mean it's a Rashad Penny contract, or it could be something more. But this sort of pours a little bit of cold water, in my opinion, on the Chargers selecting a running back on day two, which was one of the best landing spots. So I'll pose it to you like this. Everybody will tell you Dallas right now is the landing spot. You brought up Jonathan Brooks to Dallas, where that would, and I share your opinion on that. But besides Dallas, is there another landing spot that you think is great for one of these rookie running backs, or at least pretty good?
This is tough. I mean, I think there are some underrated spots. I'll touch on a few underrated spots. I think that Houston is an underrated spot. I think the question there is, how quickly do you think the cliff is going to come up for Joe Mixon, even though the Texans don't believe it's coming up quickly? There's been plenty of running backs where a team says, oh, this is our guy for the next 2 or 3 years. And after year one of the contract, say, well, maybe not. And we also know this is a souped up offense, a highly amazing offense, you know, just what they have assembled there. So I think Houston is an underrated spot. I think that Denver, I think we've seen what Javonte Williams is going to be in the NFL, and he's getting close to the end of his rookie contract. And if they do bring him back, it's on like a 1 year deal. Right. I think Arizona is a really interesting spot. I love James Conner. James Conner was magnificent last year, tremendous value, but James Conner may only be a 1 year player. Josh Jacobs in Green Bay. They basically signed him to a one-year deal with options. So I think the key to finding the good spot, and again, Green Bay, ascending offense, right? So you want an intersection of opportunity, maybe not right away. Let's not be too focused on the depth chart today. What's the depth chart going to look like a year from now? I think that's what you want to look for. Those are the boxes I'm looking to check. I think Houston, Green Bay, Arizona stand out.
And just another two running backs that have kind of steamed up in best ball, dynasty, you name it, sort of because people are projecting them to survive the draft. Zamir White, Chuba Hubbard. Do you have optimism for those two guys heading into next year, or these guys that are getting a little bit steamed up too much because just their situation and the touches?
Well, I think they're both still somewhat underrated. I mean, Zamir White still, I'm looking right now, 101st pick in underdog drafts right now, and Chuba Hubbard is 128th pick. So I was looking at this last year. I want to try to write it up, or looking back at last year, that in redraft leagues, and like you said, the extra permutation here is, will they survive the draft? Will their teams bring in another running back? I think in the case of the Panthers, boy, they just don't have a lot of draft capital. And then this is not the draft class to take a running back that is a foundational running back. So I think that the Panthers are just going to punt. I mean, they may take a third day running back, but not somebody who's going to really threaten Hubbard. Raiders are a little bit tougher, but I do think that Zamir White showed at the end of last year with Antonio Pierce as a head coach that he can do what Antonio Pierce wants, which is just body blow, body blow, body blow, just wear down the defense. And so both of those guys, I think when you look back at last year in your redraft league, classic zero running back, do the opposite, upside down drafting. If you just took the lowest rated running backs that were projected to lead their team in touches, that's it. That's the criteria. You crushed it. You absolutely crushed it. And I think that right now, those are two guys clearly in that group. And the thing about this year's running back class is, I mean, Theo, how many running backs in this class are even going to make an impact next year? Four, five, six? I mean, probably three or four of the ones we expect, and maybe one or two others, maybe either by opportunity or they're just surprisingly good, like Isaiah Pacheco came on in his rookie year. But I think we are overestimating the impact of rookie running backs in general.
Well, one rookie running back who it's when you do your, you know, I'm not giving away the whole rankings, but let's just say that there's a sizable gap between your RB1 and your RB2. You've got Jonathan Brooks even higher than we do. You've got him, let's call it the top 10 for single QB rankings. And then it's 12 spots until RB2, Trey Benson.
Right.
Talk about Jonathan Brooks and his sort of fantasy upside. How, and I'll say this, is he somewhat landing spot proof? Is he that talented a back?
Yes. So you're going to get a discount because he's coming in off an ACL tear. So his draft capital is going to be depressed. He probably will be a second round pick. Maybe not. Watch, Carolina is going to take, I think I saw a mock with Carolina taking him in the early third, right? There's your Chuba Hubbard.
They had him in, they had him out. And they had him and Benson in for top 30 visits. So
yeah, it makes sense. I mean, they should definitely be kicking the tires on these guys. They just have so many needs. But here's the thing about Brooks, okay? The simplest case I can make is that he was most of Bijan Robinson last year before he got hurt. By whatever way you like to measure running back performance, he was in the same echelon as Bijan Robinson, okay? So that should give you a pause right there. That in the same system, same program, Jonathan Brooks produced like Bijan Robinson. He's an excellent pass catcher, Brooks is. And the other thing about Brooks, he looks like an NFL running back. He approaches his job. When you watch his patience, his footwork, he knows when to be physical, right? He has a physical edge. You can tell that he is not a running back that has been able to excel in college because his physical tools are so overwhelming compared to his competition. He is a back. He moves smoothly with intention. He's got loose hips. He's always got a solid base. He's always running over his base. He has elusiveness. He has a physical edge when it's time to take on contact. He's not contact averse, but he's an efficient runner who wants to get north-south. And he does have a second gear in the open field. So he already looks to me like a veteran running back. And I think that he really stands out in this class because I don't think there's another running back in this class, Theo, that you could project as an every down starter other than Brooks. And Brooks isn't necessarily just an every down starter. He could be an excellent every down starter.
Yeah, he's a cleaner prospect than Trey Benson. I love Trey Benson. I want to get a lot of Trey Benson, but I agree with you. I think it's sort of the day of running back by committee. You sort of look for these guys that can handle high volume and also handle work as a receiver. And I think Jonathan Brooks definitely checks those boxes. But let's get away from running back a little bit.
Okay.
Let's talk about wide receiver. And just a quick bird's eye view, because of course you love the big three. How could you not? It's incredible. But I'll give you an either or. 2021, we saw Ja'Marr Chase, Jalen Waddle, and Devonta Smith as our top three wide receivers in the class. How would you compare collectively those three versus Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Roma Dunze to kind of give you a perspective of how enthusiastic is about the big three?
Ranking them at the time of the draft, we have to be honest, no cheating. At the time of the draft, I probably would have had Chase number one, but then Harrison, Nabers, Odunze, 2, 3, 4, and then Waddle and Smith. And just quickly on Waddle, I don't know that we've really seen a stretch of football where he has stayed healthy and shown us what he could do. Now, you might say, well, that means he's not going to stay healthy. It might mean the best is yet to come. But I do think that these are the three best prospects in this draft, period, regardless of position. And I think that whatever teams get them, I wouldn't be surprised if a Buffalo, a Jacksonville, a team well outside of the top 10 moves up to get one of these guys, because in most draft classes, they would be not just the number one wide receiver, but the number one offensive prospect when you don't include quarterback value, inflating the urgency for teams to go up the board and get them.
Yeah, I think you kind of nailed that. Roma Dunze might be wide receiver three in this class for many, if not most, but he could be the 101 in a lot of single QB rookie league drafts in the past. Fantastic.
Brian Thomas would have been the number one wide receiver in last year's draft. He's not in the top three this
one. Let's stay with that one because, you know, everybody loves the top three. We could hear you talk about those guys for an hour, Sig, but I want to get you out soon. But I do want to touch on sort of that next tier. Is Brian Thomas Jr. the one that gets you the most excited when you look at the group of potential first-round NFL draft picks? That's Brian Thomas, Adonai Mitchell, Ladd McConkey, Xavier Worthy. I think all of those four guys could get drafted in the first round, but who has the biggest fantasy upside?
Oh, that's Thomas. That's got to be Thomas. Because you already have Thomas. I think it was Thor Nystrom. It does outstanding work over at Fantasy.
Been over on Dynasty Life with me recently. A great episode. Check it out, guys.
Oh, yeah. He's awesome.
He was on the couch recently, too. You can check out both of those.
Yeah. I love his enthusiasm. But I think he might have compared him to Christian Watson. I'm sorry, Thor, if it was somebody else who did. So you already have that kind of game from Brian Thomas. Like Ian over at Fantasy Life, who I also love, Ian Hardit, said, you know, he's like a fire truck with the jet engine. So you have you have speed, you have legit NFL deep speed in a big frame. But if more of the route tree is unlocked with him, you're talking about a ceiling not that far below, if it is at all below the top three. He's got that ceiling. Ladd McConkey, I think, would be the second most exciting out of that group because he's already a technician. You know, he already has his craft down. And maybe he's never going to approach, he's not a true number one because of his size and because he's not an outside guy who's going to bang with, you know, press, bump and run coverage and stuff like that. But in the right offense, he could easily be a 1,200, 1,300 yard receiver. And his floor is really, really high because his route running combined with his speed and his hands and ball skills, you know, I don't want to say he can't miss, but it sure looks like that. Mitchell and Worthy, again, for fantasy, we get things a little twisted here because I think Mitchell and Worthy, some of the value that puts them in the first round is not necessarily stuff that's going to show up for fantasy football. With Worthy, you have a guy that you can't play too high safety when Worthy's on the field. Yeah, I'm sorry, single high safety. You have to play two high safety. You have to, right? That's going to open up the running game, right? That's going to open things up in route combinations on his side of the field. That's going to allow more to happen. It's not going to show up on Worthy's stat sheet, but his speed is going to change. It's going to distort defenses. Mitchell can do that too, not as to the same extent as Worthy, but Mitchell, unlike Worthy, adds in when he's on, just the ability to make plays on the ball in flight. Ricky Pearsall, I think, would be the other guy who really stands out, where just eye-popping plays. You know, you see the ball in flight, you see the path of the receiver, you think, well, he's not going to be able to catch that. And he finds a way to catch it. And that's an NFL skill. So, you know, Mitchell, I think, is a projection with a low floor and a high ceiling. Worthy, his value doesn't show up as much on the stat sheet. McConkie, I think, has a high floor and a high ceiling depending on where he lands. And then Thomas has that high floor, and then Thomas has that spectacular ceiling. If he goes to Buffalo, watch out.
Oh my gosh, if Brian Thomas Jr. goes to Buffalo, I mean, people are gonna be losing their minds to get that 109 in, yes, in rookie draft. He might leapfrog JJ McCarthy,
sure,
in that scenario. So I have two quick hitting questions to end, yeah, it here. Who is the most underrated, and they could be the same answer here,
yeah,
the most underrated dynasty or take fantasy football asset in this class, the player that people are not as excited about as they should be?
Yeah, when I'll touch on Jonathan Brooks again. I think Bowers could end up being the answer to that also. You know, to bring up a name or two maybe that we haven't yet. And again, some of this is the Blue 100 is going to get blown up. One of the things I've learned over the 20 years is boy, landing spot is important. Landing spot is really, really, and not just because of immediate opportunity, but because of which organizations set up players to hit the higher end range of outcomes. I think of one really interesting guy, underrated, is Jalen McMillan. And speaking of Thor Nystrom, he brought up how McMillan was playing hurt last year. It maybe created this idea that Polk and McMillan, Jalen Polk and McMillan, three Washington wide receivers in this class, that Polk is the better playmaker or the better prospect, where you have to go back. And McMillan is that classic Tyler Boyd crafty slot. And the Bengals are one of the teams that brought him in. So again, that's imagine him with Joe Burrow, especially if they trade T. Higgins to New England, or just projecting him down the line. It's not sexy, but that crafty slot receiver with a quarterback like Joe Burrow can put up some numbers.
Your favorite sleeper running back?
There's so many. And there's a lot of answers.
Say Tyrone Tracy for the people. You just had four on.
Yeah, and Tyrone Tracy's pretty high in my rankings. I think he's like my running back 7 or 8. Kamani Vidal is another one that shows up on a lot of people's sheets. I'll say favorite, maybe not my favorite for drafting, maybe not my favorite for outcomes in terms of fantasy, but my favorite story, I just got to mention Ray Davis from Kentucky. He's a guy who both his parents were in prison when he was young. He was in foster care. He was living in a room at the hospital for a couple of months. Nothing he's going to see on the field is anything compared to what he's already overcome in his life for us to be talking about him as somebody at the top of his profession already. And I root for people like that in the NFL.
We love seeing those sort of players that are able to overcome adversity and reach their dream to reach the NFL. I think it's one of the great things about the NFL draft is when you get to learn these players' journeys. Sig, this was an awesome time today. Let everybody know where they can find your work.
Yeah.
I mean, you're living under a rock if you can't find Sig at this point, but where can everybody find your work? And do you have anything coming out podcast-wise before the NFL draft?
Yeah, I'll be doing one more couch session. The one with Thor will be out there Monday. I'm recording with Dane Brugler, which is like,
nice.
Oh man, Dane,
that's very cool.
He's
very
cool. I remember bumping into Dane out on the draft scene when he was like 19 under Gil Brandt's wing. What he does is spectacular. The Beast is just, and he highlights a lot of those stories. He by far is the best at uncovering those stories and giving you that story about the players. And then we'll be doing our live stream during the draft first round. Matt Walden will be joining me, a lot of other guests. We have a lot of fun. It should be fun, the first round of the draft. And then, you know, Sigmund Bloom on Twitter, football guys, all that good stuff. I mean, our cup runneth over with quality fantasy stuff. And I'm just happy that we still get to be in the club.
Yeah, this was awesome today. Thanks again, Sig. Stick with us here at Player Profiler. Dynasty Life with Scott Barrett, Dynasty Life with Ryan McDowell should already be here depending on when this episode drops. And we're going to try to sneak in one more episode of Press Coverage, one more episode of Dynasty Life before the NFL draft. We will see you soon.